For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20. Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes,
y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
It's not the best one. It's not the great one. You're speaking with the juiciest one.
Chris, I live in a gigantic mansion and need a forklift to move my fish tank Jericho.
He's on the list for canceling on us.
Well, I got to add to that because he was scheduled for next Monday or Tuesday, and he's postponed it a week.
Why?
And so, well, I actually have some audio here. He said he wanted to send in an audio explanation. So
okay.
I just got it. I have not listened to it yet. Let's see here.
Hey, listen, Feeney. It's Le Champion here. Just want you to tell those guys, those Keeping It 100 guys, that I'm not really sure I want to do the show now. I've heard all about this mole. That's apparently, it's a real thing, like I told you about last week. And it's just weird. Like I said, those guys have changed a lot. I mean, Disco's always been an asshole, but kind of worried about some of the other guys involved. One of the guys' names begins with K and ends with N. He says bro a lot. I think there's kind of some issues that of me maybe doing that show. Man, I don't know. I'm really not impressed with some of the rumors I've been hearing. And, you know, as you know, you can't have a mole. You can't have some guy recording things behind your back, airing things that you don't want to be aired. And, of course, this is completely between you and me. Don't air this.
Oh, wait.
I trust.
Should I stop? Should we keep playing this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Man, I'm going to get in more trouble.
Trust you, of course, but I got to worry about, the guy's name begins with a K and ends with an N. And I'm pretty sure that Klein Rock's involved in it somewhere as well. So, anyways, dude, keep your ear to the ground. Like I said, don't play this message for anybody. I'm really concerned about the mole, though. I don't really know what to do. So, I gotta kind of reevaluate things before I can come on the show. Lots at stake. There's a lot at stake. It's a big conspiracy, I think. And I think the stealing of the AEW title belt is kind of the crux of it. But don't tell anybody that. All right. Eagle has landed.
Is he speaking in secret code to somebody there?
Does he think that we had something to do with his belt being stolen? Because if he does think that, he would have never gotten it back.
That was the implication there, that it's somehow tied up in the mole situation here at Keeping It 100, where he said the mole's name starts with a K and ends with an N. That could be a couple of people.
Right.
Like who? Kevin?
Could be Kevin.
Could be Conan.
Conan. That's really it. That's really it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to be telling on myself. I think he knows very well that being on this show takes him to another level. Just being with us takes him to another level. So I think it behooves him to come on this show. Jericho, man up. Fuck the mole. You can bury Feeney for putting this on the air after you told him not to.
Yeah.
But come on the show.
Hey, JoJo, just sitting here waiting for your guys' call. I know you said you were going to call at 8 p.m. Eastern. You and Disco and Conan were going to call me to have me back on K100. So, I mean, I don't know how much longer I can wait because I only had about 15 minutes, and this is the time that you definitely told me you guys were going to call. So,
wait a minute.
I'll be here. I mean, I don't really want you guys to keep me waiting much longer. It's really not very cool, but I understand. You know, you guys are hard to get a hold of, and you guys got a lot of guests and all that sort of stuff, but I cleared my schedule to be open for you guys and skipped dinner and didn't take my kids to baseball practice because I said I had to do this interview. So mm-hmm. It's kind of a little bit, it's unprofessional is what it is. So hopefully I'll hear from you in the next couple minutes. Or we're going to have a really big problem. So.
Jeez.
Wait, who's playing baseball in November?
Yeah, that sounds. That's...
Wait, baseball. First of all, timeout. I don't know Jericho's kids that well. But Uncle Disco was solely responsible for Jericho even having kids because everybody knows that I introduced him to his wife. Okay, so then he actually referred to me as a dweeb in his book for doing that to him.
I would agree to
that. He maliciously slandered me. But let's be honest, okay? Jericho's kids don't play baseball. They fish. Have you seen the fishing pictures of his kid online? His kid's a fisher.
His son plays football. I've just seen some pictures of his son playing football.
He does play football?
Yeah.
Is he any good?
He's got some height to him, man. He's looks like he's pretty sizable. He's a pretty tall kid. I saw him on the cruise last year. They're all really nice kids, but I saw pictures of him playing football. So
yeah, I'll still.
You know,
play.
That's
I don't care if your kids. If you have your kids, or I'll bury your kids.
Wait a minute. He's even buried an unborn kid of Matt Hardy. The guy hasn't.
Oh, yeah.
And he buries him on the list every week. But this is something that's funny about wrestlers' kids. I don't know if you've ever noticed this, Frankie and D.I. Have you ever noticed that the majority of wrestlers' kids are super well behaved? It's almost like their parents don't want them to turn out like them.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point, man. Yeah.
Yeah,
learn from our mistakes.
Sound,
you know?
Did it maybe sound like Jericho was drinking? Because it sounded like he burped, kind of the thing.
Yeah,
did he?
Maybe there might have been a sip taken as well. There was a pause.
The bubbly. He's still maybe still celebrating.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
AW success and that he's the reason for it. You know,
he's a busy guy, man. I can attest for that. I mean, I see him every.
Well,
week
who does all the heat go on here with a Joe? Because maybe you got the wrong time zone, or what's going on?
The last I knew, we were scheduled like 2 weeks ago, and I never heard back from him until now. So
he's in the bubbly.
He might be confused.
All right, let's get on with the Juicy Seal.
Yeah,
I want to bury some music today. I feel like a burial, just burying mode. That for some reason.
Jeez,
I like that.
Well,
oh, by the way, one last thing. This is for Chris Jericho, Le Champion. Don't call us, we'll call you. Boom. All right, go ahead.
Orgullosamente Latino hasta la muerte y después. Worldwide Latino pride, the ambassadors of violence. LAX, K-Dog, the notorious 187 homicide.
Bang, 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 bang.
Don't say nothing.
Bang, 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 bang.
We be jumping.
Bang, 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 bang.
Just act like you know, and homie, stop
rockin'. Don't stop it. I'm from Miami, not Compton. Down with the essays in the 6-4 hoppin'. To my Boricuas in the 787. And those up in Brooklyn pullin' 211.
I come through stompin' and rollin' in my low-top chucks. Making sure you suckers feel me every time we bust. Shackled up like a nut, going 5150. Heat up and the feed up, we stuff is some picky.
This week on K100 Rehash. First up, we're going to take a look back at one of Jeff Hardy's first appearances on the show, and the conversation takes a turn from Jeff's inspirations to get into wrestling and his childhood to everyone telling Brian Pillman stories. Next up, Ryan Satin joins the show while Shane Helms remained on the show to debate Disco about a recent controversy in the ongoing and forever Russo versus Cornette wars. And finally, OVW owner Al Snow stopped by the show and talked all about his career, how he found Head, which made him both infamous and famous in ECW and WWE, his unique entrance and working with Paul Heyman. And from there, he basically teaches a class on, is there a battle between old school and new school values in professional wrestling? How to make sure you market your character for everyone, not just a specific segment of the audience. And what are the most important keys to being successful in the crazy world of wrestling? Again, thanks for checking out Rehash. You can follow the show on all social media at K100 Conan. Check out the official YouTube channel. Just go search for Keeping It 100 Official. It'll come up. Around 27,000 subscribers. Clips going up every day thanks to Husey. And you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Conan. There's also clips going up every day there, including exclusive Raw and SmackDown reviews, AEW and NXT roundtables, the ability to jump on and chop it up with Conan and DI about AEW and NXT on Wednesday nights, or whatever you want. The rest of the week, we've been doing individual calls and live subscriber mailbags. There's over 4 years of content on there, including exclusive interviews with some of the top stars we've interviewed, music discussion segments, history, politics, sports, and everything in between. So if you're a fan of the show, you'll be a fan of the Patreon. Go check it out. And that's about it. Thank you very much for checking out Rehash.
Bro, how awesome is that, that where you grew up, right? Now you're going there and you're doing shows and people are coming to see you.
It's awesome. That was my second time performing at Dorton Arena. And I'll never forget, man, I was such a little boy. Like, my dad would take Matt and myself there. And I remember seeing Jushin Liger and Flying Brian Pillman wearing the, you know, Tiger Stripe Bingle briefs.
And the super small briefs.
Oh, man. And I was such big fans of those guys. But and it's one thing's never changed about that venue, man. It is always hot as hell out there.
Yeah.
And it was that night, and still 20 years later, it was just hot.
Did you ever meet Brian Pillman?
I did, yeah, very, very briefly. And I never got to know him, but like a part of me wanted to. I was very young, and I was like, he just, you know, I was kind of like mesmerized. He had that presence about him, you know. And but I never really, I can't say that I knew him, but I did have the opportunity to meet him, and I'm very blessed for that.
What Disco? What recollection do you have of meeting Brian?
A Pillman?
Yeah.
Oh, he's just a lunatic, bro. Bro, I was on the Pillman. Pillman would call me just randomly at like 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes. Just like he's nuts. He would call me and like just two. This would be a phone call right from Pillman at 2 o'clock in the morning. Like the phone would ring. Hello. It's like, bro, this booty man thing's really got me pissed off. I'm like, well, what are you talking about? He goes, Hogan brings his buddy in and he steals your finish. That's bullshit. Bro, but that would be the first words out of his mouth when he called.
Right.
Like at 2 o'clock, you know, you should hear Madden tell stories about Pillman, like some of the legendary late night phone calls, everything. But bro, the guy was just like as entertaining in real life as he was on TV. You know, so like when you go, Jeff, growing up, who are you a fan of growing up? Like who were you like your first guys that like inspired you to get into wrestling?
Oh, like going way back, the very first two were Sting in, you know, NWA at the time, and then the Ultimate Warrior in the WWF. And like I was kind of a combination of those both, you know, that weird world of the Ultimate Warrior, but then that, you know, outrageous, you know, just cool charisma of Sting. And I think I was a combination of both of them. But then later on, speaking of Brian Pillman, like ECW, when Ray and Psychosis came into the picture, and their feud is like, when I think of great feuds, like they're my favorite by far. But like, speaking of ECW, that reminds me of like Pillman doing those classic vignettes, just like when he was in that restaurant. I'll never forget it, sticking a fork in his arm, and like the waiter just left and he said, it's all the work, you know. And that, at that time, it was strange for me, but I understood it. And but yeah, going back far, like the beginning was Warrior and Sting. Then
bro,
later,
Jeff, and how weird is it that then you later found out that they both actually broke in together?
That very weird, yeah.
Yeah,
very
and then listen to this. Let me tell you a quick Brian Pillman story. So when I first got into WCW, like in I would say maybe 1990, so we're going way back.
Yeah.
I had gone there for this international tournament. It was called the Pat O'Connor Memorial Cup. And I went there representing Mexico with Rey Mysterio's uncle. And Pillman loved, and I do mean loved, Lucha Libre. This was back in the 90s when most American guys didn't know what the hell it was. And I wicked, and I walked into the ring because since I only knew how to do lucha, I had to go over my match with whoever I was going to wrestle with. And Pillman was in the ring training, and he kept going. He goes, do you know Super Astro? And Super Astro is actually a guy that helped train me in Tijuana. And he was one of the best high-flying wrestlers. He's the guy that Rey Mysterio got the 619 from. And he was like, he was this little short guy, probably maybe even shorter than Ray, bro. And he was a little tank like Taz, but he could fly. Okay. And Pillman was asking me about him. And I'll never forget it that we were doing like these Mexican moves in the ring. And Luger was like in an effeminate voice. He goes, oh my God, do we have to start flying around now? And Pillman goes, this is the first I'd ever been there. And he goes, don't listen to him. He's just a dick, you know? and then Pillman, he got into, do you remember this, Jeff, when he left WCW and they did that work thing where everybody thought it was a shoot and Glenn actually didn't, but do you remember about that or no?
I respect you, Booker,
not,
man.
Not sure. I'm not sure.
Okay, could you tell them about the DI?
Well, it was amazing.
Yeah, remember when he was like he was supposedly a free agent in a WCW and he was doing the thing like where he was going to be going. And he actually worked it into a shoot.
He actually went
to WWE, but he was like working.
Well, he went to ECW first.
Right. I remember that. Yeah, he go to ECW first, then WWE.
And the way he got that to happen was. They wanted to do an angle like he was on the outs with management and WCW. And he's like, well, we got to work everybody. You can't have the legal department thinking it's a work. So have the legal department draw up papers and release me from my contract so that everyone thinks it's real. So they released them. So they released them from his contract that he signed with WWE.
Bro, how tremendous is that? So it's let me tell you what he did. So he called me and he was supposed to go to, he still hadn't decided where he was going. And check this out. So he calls me and he goes, hey, Conan, you know, I want to come down to Mexico because at that time I was helping book AAA. And he goes, I want to come down to Mexico. I go, bro, I don't think we can afford you. And listen to what he told me. He goes, I don't care. I want to prove to everybody that I can work on top.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he bet on himself.
Right. Yeah, right.
You know? And he did real well. So he was he was a nut, bro. I mean, like when I was hanging out, we'd go down to Florida and we tape. Jeff, I don't know if you know this, but like the WCW guys, we'd go to Orlando for like 7 to 10 days at a time and tape like 3 months worth of TV. You know, 4 tapings a day and of the syndicated stuff, right?
Was that the round stage that would spin?
Yeah. Yes. So Pillman would come to the room and we would he'd watch tapes. Pillman was fascinated with Piper. Okay. And this is when he was starting to do like his crazy stuff and everything. And Pillman would sit there and we'd watch and like he would go, hey, can I borrow these? And he would take like 3 or 4 tapes of Piper and like just watch Piper all day in his room. Bro, the funniest thing is like I'd go to his like – because I went there like I wanted the tapes but like the VCR back to go watch him back in Cannon's room, right? So I go knock on his door and like we'd been down there for 2 days out of like the 10 days, all right? I knock on his door and you know he had the suites that we were staying in down there. Bro, it opened the door. It looked like literally – like a hurricane, like if you open the door and a hurricane had blown into the room and blown everything all over the place. Like I'm telling you, like it looked like just like somebody had ransacked the place and it looked like he had like 10, 15 people over there that had been there and had a party and just taken everything and thrown it and gone crazy in there. And I was like, what the? How on earth did this guy just like do this to this room in like 2 days? You know, stuff like that. I'm like, he was just like a nut.
I never knew Pillman was a fan of Roddy Piper. That amazes me. That's awesome.
But yeah, and how cool is that? He liked Lucha. You know, he liked Roddy Piper. Super, like, yeah, just super cool dude, man.
And again, I didn't know him enough to say he's a nut. I had brief run-ins with him, I think, when we were jobbing or something. I remember we were there the day they announced his death and he had passed. And then I remember a fan in the crowd said, oh, man, that's fake. It's fake. Just like wrestling, some asshole, you know, was saying something. They did the whole 10 seconds of silence and all that. But I'll never forget that. But, yeah, I have nothing, you know. I never really got to know him. So, but, yeah, I love hearing these stories. It's pretty fascinating.
Every day we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you're ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Conan, I have a question for you.
What up, boom?
Were you a fan of Game of Thrones?
Yes, I was.
Well, Jon Snow may have been worried that winter is coming, but we need to be ready because summer is coming, and that means it's bathing suit season. If you want to look good for the beach, pool, or cookout, you may be thinking about watching your diet and hitting the gym to tighten up before you take your shirt off. It's common sense. Well, now is the perfect time to start using X-Lean 5 to help you melt away unwanted body fat and have a leaner, meaner beach bod this summer. X-Lean 5 includes thermogenic and lipogenic compounds and ketones to not only help you raise your metabolic rate, but also targets existing fat cells and uses them for energy, which is what you want to do if, like, you're doing, like, a low-carb diet. This is something that a fat burner that I use. Plus, with just the right amount of caffeine, it will get you energized and ready to attack the day and your workout, even if you're restricting calories. Combine X-Lean 5 with a smart diet and workout plan and watch the unwanted wobble melt away. X-Lean 5 is suitable for men and women. But guys, if you really want to bring the heat this summer, try the Legacy Shredded Stack, featuring our best-selling testosterone booster, Test X9, and our hugely popular Sleep and Recovery PM, so you can attack the day, boost your test and rest, and let all the hard work pay off while you sleep. Our listeners have reported some incredible results from Legacy products, and we're confident that you're going to love the results from X-Lean 5. Go to LegacySupps.com, that's LegacySupps.com, and use code K100, that's K100, for 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com, K100 for 10% off your entire order.
Yo, get your X-Lean, stay lean at Legacy Supps. Boom. Ryan, Vince Russo, boom, bring it.
Well, I was cracking up because, you know, you guys always call me a snowflake and you say that, you know, I get offended so easily and all this stuff. And Disco is one of the most loyal Vince Russo supporters out there. And, you know, he's always been like, oh, you know, just why doesn't someone want to do things in person? Why does someone want to do things in person? And then Vince Russo, who on a weekly basis is just spewing hate out there towards everyone and saying the meanest things about people and trying to get a reaction just to get downloads on his show. And then 60-year-old Jim Cornette comes along, who has a limp, who can barely walk, like, and comes out there and says, like, challenges him to a fight, like, and he takes it seriously. And to me, it's funny because he does this whole show about Mars and you know, taking wrestling too seriously, and how can grown men be taking this thing so seriously? It's fake, bro. It's fake. And then Jim Cornette, who is clearly not going to go shoot him, who is clearly not going to go fight him, who is clearly putting on a gimmick for his podcast audience because his whole thing is a gimmick and that's what his fans want. And he says this thing and Vince Russo goes and files a real restraining order where he says that he is actually in fear of Jim Cornette, which blew my mind. And when I contacted Disco about it, just like all right, you guys can never call me a snowflake again. I would never go and do something like this, for something that's wrestling related and clearly a joke, or not even a joke, but clearly something that's not going to actually happen. And Glenn over here, Disco, was defending Vince Russo the whole time. And so I was blown away, and I was like, I don't even want to hear your defense. We should do this on the show because my mind...
Before Disco, you talk. Shane, wait, because Shane wanted to talk about this. Shane, what do you have to say on this?
Well, first of all, I want an audio clip of Ryan saying clearly, and I want to somehow put that in every show. Something.
All right. From this point going forward. I did not know Shane was there. What up, Shane? All right,
Shane. Clearly, you did not know I was on this show right now. But I find it really hard to disagree with anything that Ryan just said. Like who takes out a restraint? What is Jim Cornette going to do? Even if he showed up, who can't beat up Jim Cornette? I like Jim Cornette.
Okay.
If he did have the racket. If the racket came into play, okay, then we got a problem.
Well, we all know that, obviously, yeah.
I just can't imagine actually taking the time out of your life to go and file a restraining order on Jim Cornette. Like,
okay,
like I don't know what street cred he had, if Vinnie Rue had any. If he did, that's pretty weak street to live on to begin with. But I don't know how you have any after that.
Disco has a little doozy waiting for you, and he can't wait to, like, unload it. But let me just say this. So I was invited to one of his shows, one of his five shows. Which one was it, Disco,
Fine, so people can hear it? The one that I'm on, just a new show I'm on, so podcast one.
All right. Say the name.
So Fine, we were there.
Disco.
Right. So it was a two-hour conversation. We talked about everything. Okay,
and just real quick, Vince didn't want to talk about this. Right. Before we, like, when we went on the air, we said, "Hey, we can't talk about the Cornette thing." Okay, right. So go ahead.
But we ended up talking about it. Okay, because if you're going to bring me on the show, then let's not pretend this isn't happening.
Right. Of course. So, you just asked him, and he decided, okay, we'll he just answered. He talked about it. Okay.
Right. All right. There would have been no show, you know. So the other thing was, I told him, I go, bro, just so you know, and kind of echoing what you both guys said, the whole thing's a gimmick. Okay. This is how he riles up his fan base, just like you rile up yours and just like I rile up mine. We know how we rile them up, and we're very contentious characters. So now you have to deal with the blowback. And let me tell you what the blowback is. You look like a humongous pussy for doing that.
Yep.
And then he unloaded this. Go ahead, D.I.
All right. So here, well, I'm just saying, because here's the thing, and I think this is kind of – I think it's – there's what I think is sad about this, okay? And this is an issue I have.
This isn't related to women being grown out of men's ribs, is it?
This is my issue over the course of time with wrestling media, okay? It's like what me and Conan are the only two people that – spoke to Vince about this because nobody else called him to get in front
of
life.
Are you out of your? I can cuss on here, right? I can cuss, right?
Go ahead.
Are you out of your mind, Disco? No, like,
who called him up?
First of all, why in God's name would I reach out to Vince Russo, who has dedicated months of airtime to try to discredit me? Why in God's name would I reach out to him when he filled out the documents that he turned into the court, which I paid money to have a courier go to the court and pick up for me? Because I don't need to talk to Vince Russo about this, because it's very cut and dry that he put in documents. He wrote in documents himself that I have, that he signed, that he says he is in fear of physical pain, that he's I forget the exact wording. I don't have it up because I'm annoyed with you right now. But he's fear of physical harm. He put it in writing. I read it myself.
Ryan, and let me tell you something. And I told him this. I said, how on God's green earth I can see Cornette, because he also has a problem with Bischoff. I said, I can see you having a problem with Bischoff. I go, I had a big problem with him, like real big. And I had him on the show, and he was a gentleman, and we squashed it, okay? I had a problem with Bruce Pritchard, where Shane was present when it – remember Shane?
Yeah.
Shane was like, what's going on here? I squashed that. I go, so how do you have a problem – how do you have a problem with Meltzer and Satin? I go, you've managed to piss off everybody, you know? And at the end of the day, I actually felt like he felt bad. Like, I think, like, maybe, you know, he's gone too far or something.
He has completely gone too far. Yeah. Also, the other reason I don't need to reach out to him is because he does a daily show that he puts out where I listen to it. Just because I don't talk about him all the time doesn't mean I don't keep my ears to what he's doing just in case he's bashing me in some sort of way. So I've listened to the show. I've heard both sides. I watched all the YouTube videos. I don't need to call him because he did five fucking YouTube videos about it that showed what why he filed the police report or why he filed the restraining order. So to say, oh, this is my problem with the wrestling media, I reach out to people all the time, dude, all the time. And just because in your time you that wasn't a thing, don't group me in the same people who don't do that, because I reach out to people all the time, dude. I pride myself on it. Like, I didn't
reach. How often do you reach out to people?
Time out, Ryan. Time
out. All the time.
Clearly. Clearly, he reaches out to people all the time.
I never said that. You didn't. I specifically am categorically talking about this specific case. That's it. And that's all I wanted to
start this off by saying, this is my problem with the wrestling media.
So explain to me
that the wrestling media didn't contact Vince Russo.
I would like to know how the wrestling media not contacting Vince Russo is somehow proof that Vince Russo is not a pussy for filing this restraint.
For one, okay, me and Conan spoke to him. Basically, you get the reason of why he actually went to file the restraint order, and this is why, okay? And this is from a conversation that me and Conan had with him, right?
Now, so, and this multiple-hour conversation that you guys have with Vince Russo, this will be up on Podcast One for everyone to hear?
No.
I hope the title of the episode is Why I'm Not a Pussy.
No, Vince does not want to air this because he wants it. Let me say this, and then sure. When I'm completely, you can ask me questions. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The reason he filed, and this is Conan will verify this because he was on the call with us, okay?
There were things I didn't know. Like, I didn't know he threatened his wife. I didn't know he called her slut.
There's some things that people that do not know, okay? But this goes back, okay? Goes back in time back in 2010 when Cornette wrote the email to Terry Taylor where basically was saying if I could kill Vince Russo, I would. An email that the TNA officials – okay, went to what they wanted. This is back in 2010.
Let me correct Disco, I had to correct Vince. Terry the Stooge Taylor continued.
Okay, so back then, where they were actually going to invite Jim to come to the TNA officers or something, and they were going to have the police arrest him for making terroristic threats in that from that email. And Vince said, "Cam, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to like stir this stuff up." Okay, so basically, Cornette threatened him a while back, and TNA was actually going to try to have Jim Cornette arrested back in 2010. Okay, so fast forward. All right, that Cornette's been on this rampage for all these years and stuff. They've been threatened to basically if he could.
But to be fair, though, isn't Russo on a little bit of a rampage too?
I can't wait till Jim hears that.
I can't. All right, let me finish. Okay, fast forward to now. Okay, and basically Vince had been challenged him to a debate, the debate of the specific lies he categorically said about me. Let's debate him. And Jim Cornette challenged him to a fight where he said he wanted no cops. No, whatever, and you know you can't bring guns and knives. And Jim Cornette even said, "I'd bring a baseball bat and bat."
Yeah, I listened to the whole thing,
bro. One of Cornette's friends, and this should be now probably before this airs. One of Cornette's good friends, okay, that's known Cornette for years, called Vince up and said, "Vince, look, I've known this guy for years. It's probably a 95% chance that nothing's going to happen, okay? But on the 5% chance that I don't know what's going on through this guy's mind and he's crazy, I would suggest that you protect yourself, okay?" So now Vince tells his wife this, all right? His wife gets scared. His wife's brother, in fear for his sister, actually gets a gun to bring over to Vince's house based on this conversation. Okay, Vince had no choice but to just do what he had to do to go get a protective order. And when the judge read the transcript of what Jim had said, and he sees the words kill, kill, kill over this course of this period of time, kill, 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 the judge had no problem giving the protective order. Basically, the protective order is like your standard things you check the boxes on.
A protective order doesn't cover his wife.
No, it does not. You're absolutely
no,
right.
He said he wanted to leave a paper trail because he was more afraid that a fan might – because I didn't know this. He says Jim lives 2 hours from him. Did you know that?
So it's like he's worried, bro. He's worried about – He's worried about like his fan base, like these things people say, like say we know where you live and stuff and all that, bro. Just like I mean that is why.
Here's what I'm saying. That's supposed to explain to me that he's not being a pussy right now because his wife made him do it.
Well, bro, you can't just think about this. Okay, let me ask you a question. If your girlfriend's brother came over and brought you a gun because you're worried because somebody said that there's a chance that somebody might commit physical harm to you, what would you do?
Well, I would let them know that the guy was cutting a wrestling promo and they were taking things a little too seriously because dumb.
That has been his contention for years and why he's never done anything like this until he got the phone call from the person that said, "Vince, I would protect myself if I were you. I've known this guy for years."
I mean, you really think wait, so just go wait, so wait, wait.
He can spin it. He can spin any way you want. He can spin it. And if your contention is
your grown man, adult person knowledge, you really think that there was a chance that Jim Cornette was going to drive over to Vince Russo's house 20 years later after their rivalry had started just because he was angry about some podcast thing that was said or something that he said on the WWE, and he was going to go kill Vince Russo or his wife?
Listen, and there's another thing too. And another reason Vince has done this is because he wants the Cornette fans to finally say, Cornette, you win. I had to file a protection order against you. I'm scared of you. You win. I raise your hand. Just leave me alone. Conan, guess what?
Yo, what up? Boom.
Flowers are blooming. The grass is growing, and it's time to chop the weeds. And thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped, you can trim your holes safely and efficiently. I'm talking about ball trimmers. Manscaped, the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming, have an exclusive offer for our audience. Use code K100 to get 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com. Join the other 2 million men who trust Manscaped. They're here to make sure you're trimmed and smelling nice. After all, it's time for spring cleaning. So here we go. Spring has sprung, and Manscaped has the best tools to get you ready. Manscaped are the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming and have forever changed the grooming game with their amazing products. They're here to help you with your above-the-waist holes, too. Have you heard of their Weed Whacker? This is a great product. But the nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. I get this because I get nose hair. So it's great for me. And there's nothing more gross than nose hairs flying in the wind. The premium Manscaped Weed Whacker uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. It means it chops it up. Manscaped is making whacking your weeds a time to look forward to delivering maximum confidence while providing hygiene. Speaking of incredible hygiene, Manscaped has formulations to keep you fresh and ready for everything that comes your way all day. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. So guys, if you're going on a date, you need this. It's starting to get hot outside, and this is crucial so your balls stop sticking to your leg. That's the legit worst, and that is true. There's nothing more annoying than sweaty balls. And you'll also find the Crop Reviver, spray-on toner for your balls, which will keep you smelling fresh down there just like spring flowers. Speaking of smelling fresh, complete your grooming game this spring with the new Refined Cologne Signature scent by Manscaped. This stuff is legit and will have you smelling like royalty. The cologne is light, approachable, and gentlemanly in all the right ways, and you'll be the talk of the next quarantine hang. Smell good, feel good this spring. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code K100, that's K100, at manscaped.com, M-A-N-S-C-A-P-E-D.com. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code K100 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code K100 at manscaped.com. It's spring cleaning, baby, and your balls will thank you.
Plus, the great thing about this, bro, comes with these anti-chafing shorts, which are incredible. I don't know if they sell those separately, but they should. And you can also, if you buy two of these, you can use it for, you know, your hair, your face, under your arms, men, women. So, I mean, this thing is outstanding. It's one of our favorite products that we have here on the show. And one of the great things, like Disco said, no nicks.
Yeah, as it's getting warmer, I mean, now's a great time, too, to use their Crop Preserver, the anti-chafing ball deodorant. I have it right here. And it works. It makes you smell good, and you're not going to get that, chub rub or whatever you want to call it. It's very handy in the summertime. So,
yeah. So, make sure you get this. I mean, it's very high-quality material. You know what I'm saying? And it's convenient, and everybody shaves. So why not buy the best in the game? You know, Manscaped. Get your trim on. Boom. Al, I wanted to ask you this question because before we have guests on the show, I like to do my due diligence and do very thorough research, which means I go to Wikipedia, okay? Right. So, but I was just kind of going through your career, and there's something that stuck out at me because I didn't know that this storyline, this is how it actually began, and I always loved when you did the shit with Head, okay?
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to read this because I think you'll like this, D.I., It says, Sarvin found success back in ECW, billed once again as Al Snow. Sarvin developed a new character gimmick after reading about abnormal psychology and finding a mannequin head on the street near the ECW arena during Mummer's Day Parade. What is that?
It wasn't on the street. I found it but at the old Alhambra Arena on the other side of the building, they used to build the parade floats for the Mummers Day parade. It's something that they do in Philadelphia. And I found a styrofoam head back there. That same night I'd worked with Sasuke, great Sasuke.
Right.
And I'd read a book about abnormal psychology, and there was a woman, it was a case study about a woman who had paranoid schizophrenia, and she had what they call transference disorder, where she transferred the sickness on the inanimate objects that she was hearing the voices from, meaning like that lamp was crazy. She wasn't. And
right.
So I thought, you know, I'm going to start carrying this styrofoam head around, and I'm going to treat it like it's talking to me and like it's insane and I'm not. So
right, okay.
So that's more character development than we see on like a typical character on TV these days, right?
Let me finish reading this because this gets better. Disco. So it says. So it says he got the idea to portray an individual with a schizophrenic disorder using the head as a prop for projection. In this role, Sarban received a lot of fan and management support for his Job Squad storyline, which promoted him as being driven insane by years as a jobber for the WWF. Okay? That's okay. Then it says, in the storyline, Snow, upset at his lot in life, asked Cactus Jack what he had to do to get anywhere in wrestling. Jack said Snow that to become famous, he had to get a little head. Okay, meaning he had to be willing to sleep with, have sex with the Booker. Snow, however, took this literally, and thus he started coming to the ring with a mannequin head with the words "Help me" written backwards on its forehead. An action Snow himself began to do. I mean, this is just brilliant shit. Then it says, whom he talked to as if it were a real person, which prompted ECW crowds to want "We want head." Okay, right. And intentional double entendre. This is one that I used to love, and I forgot about this till I was reading this, Al. It says ECW promoters handed out styrofoam mannequin heads at wrestling shows, and audience members started waving them and shouting "head, head, head."
Oh yeah,
in time to breathe by the Prodigy, which was a great fucking song. You know what I'm saying?
It was awesome. Yeah, right. It fit perfectly together,
and the entire audience would throw the heads into the ring, bro. That whole thing was brilliant.
Yeah, but when I went to WWE, I did the "What does everybody want? What does everybody need? What does everybody love?" And everybody, all the audience, and even you know, still to this day, everybody thinks I'm talking about oral sex. But I was actually cutting my own angle because if you pay attention, every time I do it, I get angrier as I say it. It's because I was getting jealous of the head, so I was hoping to turn heel and shoot an entire angle where I would wrestle the head just like I would somebody else. We'd split up like all tag team partners, you know, all tag team partners get jealous of each other.
Right.
You know, Sean kicked Marty through the barbershop window and I was going to turn heel on the head and I was going to have an all angle with the head because after all those years of wanting success and wanting to be famous and wanting to be loved, you know, what did everybody still want? They didn't want me. They wanted the head. What did everybody still need? They didn't need me. They needed the head. And what did everybody love? They didn't love me. They loved the head. So at some point I'd get jealous and turn on it. So
let me give you how a story grew out of this. So no, because Al was doing the head. Okay. And I see the ECW stuff. So we're in Tucson, Arizona, and Tucson's got a nice little college town. You can walk around and like a lot of cool stuff and everything. And there was a store, and in the store there was a plastic goose, mm-hmm. Okay, this big giant plastic goose. And I said, okay, and I said, you know what? I go, I'm gonna do this. Get this, like, you know, Al has the head thing. I go, I'm gonna get a visual aid. I'm gonna bring this on the show and start calling it the Disco Duck, even though it was a goose, right? So right. I had, so for a while on TV, I had the plastic the Disco Duck, even though it was a goose. And the funny thing, like, you had a very like good, well-defined backstory. Like, you know, what did the head mean? Like backstory. My backstory was. Here was the backstory of the goose.
Yeah.
We go into Ernest Miller, who's the commissioner's office. He goes, "What the hell is that?" I go, "This is my visual aid." That was it.
It's my visual aid.
It's my visual aid. That I go, so people are always asking, who came up with the duck and stuff like that? So I said, "No, it's not. It'd be funny to walk out there with this. Like, it's absolutely nothing to play with this and everything." But there was no, like, you know, no, like, The psychological makeup of the head story is fascinating, though. I mean, I love stuff like that.
So when you came to Polly with that idea, did he just let you run with it, or did he help you with his own ideas also as it grew?
No. Polly, he just let me run with it. He didn't. In fact, there were numerous times he'd come to me and he'd tell me, you know, he said, "I hate your manager. You know, I don't get it. I don't like it." And then one night, we actually did a show. It was in October. It was around Halloween, and we did a show in Stamford, Connecticut. And that night, he came to me and he said, "You know, tomorrow night in the arena when we go to Philly, I'm going to want you to come out. You know, and you're going to save the Sandman, but you come out with the Sandman's t-shirt wrapped around the head." And so he was trying to give me the rub from Sandman. So I worked with Paul Diamond, and Paul gave me a cord buster and trapped my right arm up underneath me, and it completely dislocated my shoulder to the point to where I couldn't even stand up straight. And so I was out for a couple of weeks. I came back at the November to Remember pay-per-view, and it's funny how things work out, because quite honestly, it wasn't all the in-ring stuff that got me over. It was all the backstage stuff. And what really kicked it off was at the pay-per-view, Chris Candido politicked for me to have a vignette backstage where I was in the locker room and I was up. Everybody was normal but me. And I was arguing with the head. And that was the first time I'd ever done it outside of the ring. And that was the one that kicked it off right there. That was the one thing that got me over, was the more of those things that I did backstage where it showed the interaction and the relationship between the two of us, between me and the head, and me treating it like it was a living person. Then that was what really got me over.
I just was just amazed because we've been talking, me and Disco and Joe, about just how there's not enough characters that are over in WWE, or the storylines don't make sense. And you look at how much details you guys went into this storyline, you know, it was very well done, you know, and like these storylines today, they're so quick. They don't mean anything. Sometimes you think you missed a show, but you didn't miss a show. They just didn't explain it, you know, like Elias. I don't know if you're watching the product right now.
A little bit, yeah.
But Elias just turned heel out of the blue for no reason when they just got him over as a face. Yeah. You know, I was like, what's going on here? You know, so it's just very weird.
I think that, I try to, from my own personal experience, I've tried to explain to the young guys that the most valuable thing that you can develop is that character, that personality, for the audience to be able to, you know, turn to their friends and family and go, "You got to watch this show. There's this guy and he's A, B, C, D, E." If they can't do that, it doesn't matter how good you are, what physical moves you can do. I mean, I remember standing on the ring apron in Smoky Mountain on the outside. I could spring up to the top rope, turn in midair and moonsault into the ring. It didn't make me a dime. I started running around with a head and talking to it and shaking it. And an audience could then describe me to their friends going, "Hey, you got to watch a show. There's this lunatic. He talks to a head, you know?" And then when you do get a character like that, you know, you can't break kayfabe, you know, you can't stop selling what it is the audience has bought. You know, I tell kids all the time, back in the day when I was really, really over with the head, I would travel by myself. I'd go to a restaurant. I'd take the head in with me. I'd set it across the table from me in public, and I'd buy dinner for the two of us and sit there and argue with the damn thing. And, you know, it was uncomfortable. It wasn't, you know, it was weird. You know, but and I got asked. Weird. I got asked to leave a lot of restaurants, but if you saw me in the restaurant and then you were flipping the channels on your TV and you saw me on TV, you'd, you know, "Hey, come on in here. Remember that guy at the restaurant last night? He's on TV. That guy's really insane."
It's guerrilla marketing, basically.
Yeah.
It's guerrilla marketing. And so, you know, which works, because you never know. It's like social, it's like networking, you know. Joe, you bought, didn't you buy the school? What do you do right now?
I bought OVW.
You bought OVW. Okay, yeah. So who like your training guys there, something have, like, how many people you got down there right now?
Probably a total of a roster of about 30.
And how do you who are the, like, who's the training crew? Like, who's training?
Right now I've got Rip Rogers still, who's still with me. Right. I'm going to at some point bring in Jay Bradley because he has the experience. And that's what I look for, is I look for people that have experience. As far as I'm concerned, especially in this day and age, anybody can have information. And 98% of people equate knowledge to the fact that they have some information about a particular subject or a topic. And that's not knowledge.
Right.
Not real knowledge is when you have information and then a commensurate amount of experience that goes along with it.
Did you hear me talk about this on the Russo show?
No, why?
I brought this up a couple weeks ago. I said
everybody listens to him on the Russo show.
No, but it's funny when I hear some guys repeat. But I was saying, like, I go. Here's the thing, you know, like you look at like guys, like, okay, we're all doing this podcast right now,
yeah.
Right? We're podcast. Everybody's got a podcast, everything. And I say, I go, but you know, not what is the one thing that comes from that, the one underlying factor that comes from knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge and wisdom requires experience. Okay, yeah. I say, like, some people say, like, oh well, you know, you can't like you know, you talk sports and stuff. And I go, yeah, I've played sports. I've played baseball. I played basketball. So I have knowledge and wisdom about how to actually play the games. I go, the fascinating thing about this is there's people that have never wrestled before trying to portray the fact that they're speaking from a point of knowledge and wisdom. I was like, and they have no experience. I'm like, how does that happen?
And Al, when he said that he played sports, if you consider girls golf a sport, yes, he did.
Al, this is funny because, like, you see the thing these days, especially on social media, that there's kind of there's the war between the old the new school guys, the people today, the wrestlers today, and the old school, and they look
There is no old school or new school. That saying that there's an old and a new school is saying that the business has changed and it hasn't changed, because we're still selling exactly the same thing when we get in the ring that we sold 30 years ago or 40 or 50 or 60. We're only selling the one thing that's fake, and there's only one thing that's fake about wrestling, and that's just the finish.
Right.
Now, unless you come up with something new that's fake now that you're selling, then yeah, I agree with you. It's a new school. You're now selling something other than the finish. But if you're still just selling the finish, which is really all the audience is paying to believe in, they're just paying to believe in who you are and why you did what you did out there. And if that was the same 20 years ago, was 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And 40 years ago, people knew that wrestling was fake as much as people know today that wrestling was fake. They just didn't have as much access to the information about behind the scenes as people do these days. Other than that,
One thing that's definitely changed at the core philosophy, what you're talking about is absolutely correct. But I think more what we've seen is a style. You know,
I agree.
Change in style.
Yeah. Performers now are trying to sell what they do, not who they are or why they do
right.
it. And that'll never work, because to your point, Disco, you know, the reason that football, baseball, and basketball have such huge audiences in the United States is for one reason, and that's because everybody's played them as a kid. They have a direct relationship to what they watch. Right. That's why hockey has a bigger audience in Canada than it does in the United States. That's why soccer is bigger all over the rest of the world than it is here. And that's why soccer is getting bigger here, is because now you have more generations of children that are playing it.
Yeah.
But before you stepped in a wrestling ring, did you ever know what it felt like to hit the ropes? Did you ever know what it felt like to take a bump in that ring? And why are you trying to sell them on what you do? Because they'll never know how it felt. In fact, to prove that point, I tell guys all the time at the end of the show, if you want to stand by the door, ask everybody who walks out if they think that ring's a trampoline or a mattress. And they'll tell you it is, because they've never been in it. They don't know how hard it is. They don't know how much it hurts. But they're not selling the intent behind it. The guys, the performers today, are selling what they do, not why they did it.
Yeah. Well, plus, what would you tell your kids about the most important thing is character or something? I reiterate this all the time. I say, look, if you look through the history of professional wrestling from as far back as we can remember, as far as we've known, and if you look at the Hall of Famers and the people that made a name for this business, and I just try to tell people, to try to tell these kids, you go, dude, professional wrestling is this weird genre. There's never been a book written on it of what exactly it is. It came from the carnies, and like everybody's interpreted their definition of what wrestling is. I go, but the one thing that I've known is that the one thing that gets you over, okay, and that if you don't have this, you're going to have a very difficult time getting over, is that you have to have something
that fans can imitate. Like if you do something that imitate that a fan can vicariously like I say, if two kids are going to go in their lawn and put a couple mattresses down, and one they're going to wrestle each other. One kid's going to be the Disco Inferno, and the other kid's going to be the Macho Man Randy Savage.
What kid's going to do that?
None.
The smart kid's going
to
be the Disco
Inferno. That's why he likes to stay at the story. I've heard. And,
he's heard.
He gets a chance to put himself over. Okay, just so you know. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll do this, bro. I'll appease you. One of them's Conan, and one of them's Macho Man Randy Savage. Okay.
Okay.
Other that's than them going out there and doing wrestling moves to each other. If one of the guys is doing the ooh-yeah and doing the thing and Conan's doing his orderly, okay, if they never told you who they were beforehand, if you're sitting around watching, say, hey, that kid's being Conan and that kid's being Macho Man Savage. Right. I go, today, it's like, who is who? You know, but like, mm-hmm. like when the Rumble the other day, they had 80-something people on the show, right? Mm-hmm. 75 of them came out. I couldn't tell you a thing about them. Couldn't tell you a catchphrase they had. A move they do, or say, you know, they have nothing identifiable with them other than the fact that they go out there and wrestle. And I try to tell people, go, wrestling's not about the moves and stuff. It's about portraying your personality.
Personalities.
And we say that so much, but like this new generation of people that think they can just get this is awesome chance by doing a bunch of acrobatic things. I'm like, guy, I go, there's not, what we're saying is not a lie. It's like, I'm not telling you this because it's not true. I said, you can do this too, is what I try to tell these kids, you know?
And you can. You can get those, this is awesome chants and, you know, all of it. And let's face facts. I mean, the number one rule of wrestling is if it sells tickets, do it.
Right.
But, you know, then you as a performer are marginalizing yourself. You know, you're willing to market yourself. And granted, you're going to be successful, but you're only going to be successful on this platform. Not on this platform. You know, you're not going to reach the real audience with that we're always trying to reach, with like we did back in the late 90s and the early 2000s. We were, all of us were reaching out and we were, you know, touching base with Mr. and Mrs. Walmart. And that's the largest percentage of the population of, you know, the United States are people that go to Walmart. Yep. You know, I tell wrestlers all the time, why market yourself to wrestling fans? You know, they're going to come to the show.
Yeah.
Why not market yourself to those people that are casual fans that if you don't somehow capture their imagination and, to your point, create some kind of personality and character they can get excited about and relate to and turn to their friends and family and describe you in a sentence or less, you're going to make some money, but you're also going to go through it. If you want to make life-changing money, you want to make Steve Austin money, you want to make Hulk Hogan money, then you want to make The Rock money, then you need to market yourself to Mr. and Mrs. Walmart. That's who you need to market yourself to.
Stone Cold Steve Austin, there he is. Mr. Austin, earlier on, we came to you. We missed you. We could hear something going on, but unfortunately, you were unavailable.
You could hear something going on for good reason. Do you know where the number one talent in professional wrestling was sitting on his way to Stamford, Connecticut today? He was sitting in seat 38C. Do you know where seat 38C is? It's right next to the airplane outhouse. Do you know what the number one piece of wrestling talent had for lunch today? It was a little stale sandwich stuffed in a brown paper bag. Now, I'd like to say that's what made me sick, but that's not the case. It's seeing Bret Hart whine and cry every time he gets on the WWF TV, and it makes me violently ill to my stomach. If he ain't whining, he's quitting. If he ain't quitting, he's doing something else. It ain't nothing good, and it just makes me sick.
Well, we will hear
Shut up. I'd like to tell you that I was indeed throwing up everywhere, but it goes a little beyond that.
All right.
Way beyond.
In any event, we will come to you a little bit later on.
Yeah, you're going to come to me because you got no choice. Someone's going to get the lights knocked out tonight.
All right, thank you very much. It's in our WWF studios, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mr. Austin, of course, it was at the Final Four in which you attempted to prevent Bret Hart from becoming World Wrestling Federation champion. As we are looking at footage now, again, it seems as though
You've been a thorn in Bret Hart's side ever since he returned to the World Wrestling Federation, and certainly this night was no exception. The final four in which you attempted to prevent him from becoming World Wrestling Federation champion. Nonetheless, the Hitman became the WWF title holder for the fourth occasion. However, the very next night, in a matchup with Psycho Sid. Again, we take you back to the footage. What is it with you? Here, submission hold apply. Yes, the Hitman Bret Hart with his patented maneuver. The sharpshooter, and look at this. The chair coming down right in the back of the head. Behind the official's back, behind Psycho Sid's back, and then, of course, the powerbomb. One like we saw earlier on to cover the count, and Sid became champion partially due to you. Your response, do you show any remorse whatsoever for your action?
The only remorse I got is that I didn't hit him harder with that steel chair. Bret Hart runs around talking about everybody screwing him. Hell, for the past 7 years, I've been screwed, and it's the same old song. How come when Shawn Michaels hurts his knee, you make a video out of him? How come when Shawn Michaels gets sick, you tell the world that he's got the flu? Well, when I went to the Final Four, I was sick as a dog, and I had a blowed-out knee. Let me ask you a question. How many one-legged people could go 25 minutes with three of the top wrestlers in the world? Well, none. Stone Cold Steve Austin went out there and did just that. And I ain't making fun of no one-legged people. I'm sitting here just trying to make a point. As far as I'm concerned, I truly am the World Wrestling Federation champion, and can't nobody tell me different. Not you or anybody. As far as a submission match, it's a bunch of bull. Bret Hart, he's supposed to be the big technician, the sharpshooter. Big deal. I don't know a whole lot of a couple of submission moves, but it doesn't matter because I'll beat the hell out of Bret Hart. And as far as Ken Shamrock says on TV the other day, oh, I don't know. Bret Hart's a better technician, but Stone Cold ain't got no quit in him. Well, you hit the nail right on the head, son, because I ain't got no quit in me at all. And you can bet your bottom dollar that Stone Cold ain't gonna look at the referee and say, I quit. I submit. I've had too much. There ain't nobody. There ain't nobody in wrestling who can make me quit. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Why of all this? Why are you so bitter? Why this bitterness?
You treat me like a dog and you expect me to smile? You remind me of a jackass.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.